purpose of introducing committee bills. Representative Doyle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move LC 3993, LC 3995, LC 3516, LC 3578, LC 3581, LC 3577, and LC 3579 be introduced as committee bills.
Thank you. Representative Doyle moves the aforementioned bills as committee bills. Do we have any discussion? Clerk, could you call the roll, please?
Senator Chaplin?
Aye.
Representative Doyle?
Aye.
Representative Gardner?
Aye.
Representative Farrar?
Aye.
Representative March?
Aye.
Representative Sharp?
Aye.
Representative Walker?
Excuse.
Representative Wilson?
Aye. Motion carries. Thank you. And we'll close the work session for the purpose of introducing committee bills. All right, committee, we're going to go ahead and move into our agenda today. We are going to take things as they appear on the agenda sheet. So with that said, we'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2580, and we'll call Charles Stern forward.
Good afternoon, members of the committee. My name's Charles Stern. I'm the Yamhill County Clerk, and I chair the Oregon Association of County Clerks Legislative Committee. House Bill 2580 was introduced at our request in an attempt to improve the focus of the public on the importance of the election of the boards of directors of the various school and special service districts. Under current law, the process of verifying the positions to be elected in the regular district election begins in November during the general election activity. Also, the filing period for candidates to circulate nominating petitions occurs during the December holiday season. We believe that the current schedule contributes to the lack of candidate filings for district offices. Current filing period is at a time when the media is still focused on the general election and also on the activities of the holiday season. Usually, it is only as we approach the filing deadline that we begin to see stories about the open positions available for prospective district board candidates. By moving this election, this regular election for districts from March of the odd numbered year to May of the odd numbered year, we would move the notice and filing period for candidates for district board members to after the holiday season. We would move the regular district election filing period away from competing with the general election for media coverage, and we'd create some uniformity for voters when they vote for candidates from March of the odd numbered year and May of the even numbered year to May, the May election of both years. I have prepared kind of a calendar that would kind of reflects what the changes would be. The pink highlighting is current law, and the green highlighting is what would be reflected should this change occur. We're not doing away with the March election date in this bill. That date would still exist. It would just move when candidates would be elected to from March to May for schools and special service districts. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? Let me ask you a question.
Sure.
About your assertion that a number of, and I'm going to be jumping ahead because this has certainly happened in my own school district on this March election. Number of seats uncontested. Is this pervasive?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I believe it is. In looking at some elections in Yamhill County in March of 97, we had three races, no filings whatsoever. March of 99, 12 races with no filings whatsoever. And in this current election year, we have two with no filings whatsoever. These are predominantly in fire, park, water district type positions. But not only no filings whatsoever, is you look at the contested versus the uncontested races. And again, there's a wide gap between the number of races where you could have contests and where there are none. And we are trying to look at how do we get this communication to the public to get them involved in this very important position of school board and special districts.
Excuse me if I missed, but do you have any statistics on school board?
I don't have those, Mr. Chair, separate from just the whole. When I asked my staff, I said, find out how many races we have on to this election in the last two, how many of those are contested, and how many are no filings. And of the no filings, all of those are in, I have to take that back, in 99, I think we had a school district with a no filing.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Any questions? All right. Well, thank you very much for your testimony. Next up will be John Marshall, Oregon School Boards Association.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, good afternoon. John Marshall, representing the Oregon School Boards Association. Very briefly, I'm appearing in front of you today to support House Bill 2580 for a couple of reasons. One, as Mr. Stern indicated, this would move the filing deadline away from about the second week in January, away from the holiday season. It would allow individuals to run for election closer to the time where they take office and eliminate the lame duck status, shorten the lame duck period for many board members. And it would also allow those individuals a greater opportunity to consider budget issues before the election. I had some data here that we just published, Mr. Chair, in response to your question. A total of 1,110 people have filed to run for board positions in the March 13 election. And that includes Oregon's 198 school districts, 21 education service districts, and 17 community colleges. Of these, 48% are incumbents, and 50% are running unopposed. Compared to 1999, 46 of those individuals ran unopposed. There are 814 board positions to fill for terms beginning in July. Of those, 561 positions have one candidate, 184 races have two candidates, 49 races have three candidates, 22 positions have no candidates. That compares to 31 in 1999 and 27 in 1995. So a little bit of information. Again, we're in support of House Bill 2580, and I'd be pleased to respond to any questions.
Thank you, Representative Starr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to verify, school board elections are only on the odd-numbered years, so not during the even-numbered years.
That's correct.
Other questions? All right, thank you. Appreciate that. Hasina Squires, Special Districts.
I brought a friend.
We'll introduce you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Hasina Squires, and I'm here today on behalf of the Special Service Districts Association of Oregon, which consists of approximately 800 special districts statewide. With me today is Randy Brown, currently the Oregon Fire District Directors Association elected president and current board member at the Marion County Fire District. On behalf of the SDAO and the Oregon Fire District Directors Association, we do not support the bill and urge you to reject the bill. We believe that there is really no compelling reason to change the date. In fact, that it may be somewhat detrimental to change the date from March to May. I heard the Association of County Clerks testify that the intent of the bill was to increase the public's awareness and perhaps participation in serving on special service district and maybe school boards. I personally do not believe that you can legislate participation, and hearing the statistics that John Marshall from the School Boards Association just indicated to the committee, with out of 814 board positions, only 22 had no candidates for this particular election. I don't see that this is a huge glaring problem. Our association does not have any statistics for you today on how many positions are unfilled at the board level for this current election. We do not believe that the holiday, filing around the holiday, is an issue. I think if we asked our membership of those people who currently consider running for a fire district, water district, sewer district, does the filing date the issue that it falls around a holiday, would that deter you from serving on that board or choosing to serve on that board? I think our membership would resoundingly answer no, that a filing date around the holiday is really not. If I want to participate in that special district election, I would still file, and I would not file just because it was around the holiday. I heard that that this bill is somewhat of an attempt to stimulate participation through moving the date to May. I don't know how many of you like lawn signs, but I'm not a big fan of lawn signs cluttering up everything during the May election. I think that the March election for school district members and special service district members is a good one. I think it does highlight the importance of special districts and school districts because they have their own election date in March. They don't appear on the ballot in May with lots of other measures and other issues. And so we are concerned that potentially if this election date is moved to May, that a district, I mean, I live in Clackamas County, and if you could see the amount of contested seats that are going on in Clackamas County as far as the school boards, the Clackamas River Water District, there are a number of contested races up there to the point where mailers have actually been put out by the candidates themselves to campaign for their seats because they're so hotly contested. We believe that if this election date was changed from March to May, that would increase the volume of things on the ballot for voters to have to consider in May. Also increase the number, if literature was being sent out, the number of pieces of mail people may have to sort through, and also the number of lawn signs cluttering up everybody else's lawn sign. We think that this election date is a viable one, and that our board members are afforded the opportunity to appear on an uncluttered, so to speak, type of ballot in the March election. And so we would urge you to reject this measure. I know Mr. Brown has some comments about part of the reason that we prefer the election to be in May as it relates to preparing those new board members for their service.
Thank you. If you'd introduce yourself to the committee, please.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I'm Randy Brown. I'm president of the Oregon Fire District Directors Association and a board member of Marion County Fire District 1, East of Salem. I think if we're going to switch things around, why don't we switch it to the November election? Because then we'd all be like city and county commissioners and take office in January. The reason we have the election in March is that we take office July the 1st. We aren't the same as your municipal local elected officials. We are special districts. And by having the election in March, we are close to the budget process. That would allow whoever is elected in the election to participate in the budget process, even though they may not be a qualified board member yet, but they would have input to what they are going to be responsible for after July the 1st. So I really disagree with moving this. Our fire district is no different than any other special district in the state. We encourage participation by the public, and the reason we have a five-member budget committee is five of those are board members, five of those are citizens. That is closed input for anybody else during the budget process until a public hearing in June. So the false idea of allowing these people to participate prior to an election in the budget process or pick up a heated debate in the budget process, that's out the window. I think it's better to have these folks elected and involved in the process, not before.
Thank you. I can respect your viewpoint on that, as you just stated. A question that I would have, though, relative to turnout. Now, my experience has been over time that turnout in a March election, at least in my part of the world, seems to be very, very small, even relating to a special district or otherwise, always very small. Would it not be, and I'll let whoever wants to feel this do so, wouldn't you expect a greater turnout for your district elections if it were included in what would be a more crowded arena?
Mr. Chair, I don't have any statistics on what the difference is between March turnout and May turnout. I would assume that it is somewhat higher. Not having the statistics in front of me, I really wouldn't be able to answer that question.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, go ahead. Any further? Representative Devlin.
Mr. Chairman, I'll hold on. Are we going to have someone from the additional, from the Secretary of State's office?
You know, I don't have anyone else to testify, but I do want to bring Mr. Stern back from the clerks.
He can probably answer my question.
Okay, sounds good. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, we'll have Mr. Stern come back, please. Thanks. If you'd go ahead and put yourself back on the record there, please.
My name's Charles Stern. I'm the Yamhill County Clerk.
Thank you. One thing I forgot to ask when you were here last time is about the general workload of county clerks coming off the fall elections and moving right into this. What would the clerks appreciate out of this kind of change as far as the internal workload in the clerk's office?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we are, if you'll notice from your calendar, that in that general election process, we send a notice to the school districts and special districts saying, based on our records, here are the open positions. Now, there may have been resignations that have occurred during the year, the 2 years leading up to this, and so there may be positions that they will need to add to that list for two-year terms coming up in the election. So we need that information. So if you notice from your calendar, we send a notice, they must respond to a notice, and that's going on during the general election period. And then we publish all the open seats in the paper so that people can apply and file for those offices. That's kind of the workload shift out. It's not a huge workload shift in that noticing process, but it is somewhat a workload shift. And if I may, Mr. Chair, I'd like to respond to a couple issues that came up. One is dealing with the proliferation of lawn signs and the competition of lawn signs in the May election versus the March election. Oh, you've got to remember this is the odd year. Most years are odd, aren't they? But, I mean, this is the odd numbered year. And this year, we don't have a big May election. Frequently, you don't even have anything on the May election. And so I would not anticipate seeing more on that in the way of campaigns than we see now. There may be an occasional measure more because people have a little more time to prepare for a measure as they are working in their election and balloting process and prepping their budgets so they have time to prepare that additional measure. But as far as candidate competing with lawn signs, they're the only one for that whole year in that odd-numbered year.
Mm-hmm. Any money savings as a result of this?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I don't think there's a savings or an expenditure. There may be a savings to some of the districts which are working on measures that aren't quite mature enough to place on the March election. If they can run their candidates and major election simultaneously, they'll save themselves the cost of an election. But again, that'll vary from district to district and what's going on in that individual district's program.
Thank you. Representative Devlin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Regarding the May election, due to the double majority requirement and the reality that getting a 50% turnout in either that March or May election may be virtually impossible unless you're a very small jurisdiction with a lot of motivated people. About the only thing we would see would be the special district school boards, plus probably, would you say we'd see some cities have annexation votes, charter amendments, things of that nature, things that don't require a level turnout.
Mr. Chair, Representative Devlin, we have double majority measures on the March election, as school districts and other districts are attempting to raise bond money to meet their capacity problems. I think that we would see those on May also. So those will be there as districts attempt to meet the needs of that district.
Follow up. Just to refresh my memory. For the March or May election, special districts, cities, counties, how is the cost of the election shared?
Mr. Chair, Representative Devlin, for all elections other than the primary and general election, the costs are apportioned out based on an administrative rule from the Secretary of State's office to all jurisdictions that are conducting election for that date.
Mr. Chair, follow-up.
Follow-up.
So then if you consolidate all the odd number election year elections, although we're not eliminating them, but if you consolidate them, it would be logical that people might experience lesser costs.
Mr. Chair, Representative Devlin, that is possible for a district, assuming they were planning to have more than one election in that year, and that will vary from district to district.
Thanks.
Further questions? All right. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Anybody else like to testify on that bill? All right. We're going to go ahead and close our public hearing on House Bill 2580, and I'm interested in this idea, but I don't want to be too hasty about it.
And so I'm going to avoid
going to work session on this. Just like to think about it for a few more days, and I would request you do the same, and we'll perhaps come back and revisit that. We will now open a public hearing on House Bill 2615. First to testify this afternoon will be Al Davidson, Oregon Association of County Clerks.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Al Davidson, Marion County Clerk, representing the Oregon Association of County Clerks. The bill before you, House Bill 2615, addresses how the cost of producing local voter pamphlets will be allocated. Before getting into the specifics of this bill, I think it's important to establish a context for the discussion, and some of it flows from the questions asked by Representative Devlin on the last public hearing. Counties are responsible for conducting elections in Oregon, and the cost of those elections are paid for out of the county general fund, that is property tax dollars. For elections other than the primary and general elections, the counties bill out the cost of the election on a prorated basis to jurisdictions involved in the election based on a formula and number of registered voters. And, of course, you're aware that when the legislature calls a special election, it's not on a primary or general election, you also must appropriate funds for that. At primary and general elections, the county subsidizes the state and city governments and the cost of their elections. Other districts on the ballot pay, but the state and cities do not. To illustrate the impact of this, using my county as an example, in the May primary election, our total elections costs were $240,000. Of that amount, $97,000 would have been the state's allocated share, $39,000 would have been the city's allocated share. Combined, those two represent 56% of the cost of the election, all subsidized by the county general fund. In the general election, the total costs were $374,000, and of that, $123,000 would have been the state's allocated share, and $85,000 of that would have been the city's allocated share. Again, 56% of the cost subsidized by the county general fund. In our case, in Marion County, it was an especially difficult time because the city of Salem placed 16 measures on the general election ballot. That went along with the 18 initiatives and the 8 referrals and several other local measures that were put on the ballot. This bill, House Bill 2615, deals with only a small piece of these elections' costs. The production of a local voter pamphlet so that our citizens can have a source of information about candidates and issues, and that the campaigns have a reasonably priced vehicle to communicate with local voters. I've attached a spreadsheet that shows the impact in 12 counties of the subsidy of the city's share of the voter pamphlets. Now, not all counties produce voter pamphlets simply because of the cost. You'll note that Marion County's general election amount is relatively high at $19,000, and that's again, because the city of Salem placed 16 measures on the ballot. In fact, out of our 72-page voter pamphlet in November, 25 of those pages involve the city of Salem. Overall, 39 pages involve cities. Marion County also has 20 cities, the most of any county in the state, so our county has impacted a little more heavily on this issue. And this will continue to be an issue in our county, as the city of Salem is required to present every annexation to the voters for approval. Now, if the Salem-Keizer or Jefferson school districts had submitted 16 measures and used up 25 pages in the voter pamphlet, we would have billed them for their share of the cost based on their voter registration. And in fact, we did bill voter pamphlets and election cost to Jefferson and Woodburn school districts and 7 fire districts that were on the ballot in November in our county. Given the amount of subsidies the city's already received from the counties and elections costs, it does not seem unreasonable to allow us to recover the city-generated cost associated with producing a local voter pamphlet from which the cities and their candidates and their voters benefit. Now, the cities will probably talk about the fact that they are taxpayers and this is a double taxation issue. Actually, we've got an inconsistent policy here, because the residents of the special districts and school districts are also taxpayers and are paying into the county general fund, yet we're billing those costs back to those districts. So there's an inconsistent policy. I realize that by bringing this up, we run the risk of losing the reimbursement we get from the districts, should you decide to do that. But it seems to me that the policy ought to be consistent. And given the amount of money that counties put into conducting elections for cities, it doesn't seem unreasonable that we'd be allowed to get reimbursed for this one little piece. Be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Doyle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm curious, Al, on the your statement about, I guess, billing out the districts. Is that because it's a separate? I'm wondering why the districts are billed out, but cities aren't billed out.
Well, I think the original concept was probably that we were going to hold a primary and general election anyway. We were going to elect legislators, we were going to elect county commissioners, and so that it wouldn't cost any more to put cities on that ballot. And that's it's really not true, because cities are required to elect their city councilors at that same time. Special districts are not required to elect their district board members at that time, and so I think that's how the distinction came about in the first place.
Thank you. Further questions? Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Next up will be Paul Snyder, Association of Oregon Counties. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, I'm Paul Snyder, representing the Association of Oregon Counties, and I'm appearing this afternoon in support of House Bill 2615. For the counties, it's primarily a matter of three issues, two of which have already been discussed by Mr. Davidson. It's a cost issue. It's a matter of those who enjoy the benefits of a particular service picking up their proportionate share of the cost. Second is equity. Other districts already provide their proportionate share of the cost. The third one is a matter of an issue that we've advanced for many years, and that is that control over costs ought to also be placed in the same place as where you pay the cost. We've done this on several issues already this session and raised concerns. As Mr. Davidson testified, a 72-page voters pamphlet included 25 pages from just one city. Maybe the city pared down those costs from 30 pages to 25 pages. But if the city had to pick up the cost, maybe it could have gone down to 23 pages. It's just simply when you've got the responsibility to pay the cost, there's a greater incentive to minimize the cost. That's the extent of my testimony, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Do we have questions?
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The last on our list here will be Christy Monson, League of Oregon Cities, and she will have some guests.
Good afternoon, Chair Wilson, members of the committee. My name is Christy Munson. I'm here representing the League of Oregon Cities, and I have with me Nina Rigor. She's the Assistant City Manager for the City of Gresham. We did have the Mayor of Enterprise and our President of the League, Susan Roberts, here, but she had to leave early to catch a plane. The League of Oregon Cities urges you to vote do not pass on House Bill 2615. For two primary reasons, one of which I'll go into and the others of which Nina will discuss. The first reason is it's poorly drafted. And even if it was trying to even if the goal that it was trying to accomplish was a good goal, it probably would not get us there, and I'll talk to you about that. Additionally, it shifts responsibility for the voters' pamphlet cost for part of the voters' pamphlet's cost from the counties to the cities. And you've heard arguments of why that should be done. However, the voters' pamphlet is just one piece of a smaller responsibility that's been delegated to the counties, and it's the responsibility for our electoral process and our elections. And the counties sought this responsibility years ago. And it's a very big responsibility. It's part of our democratic process. It's not just a service to be paid for by entities, by cities, but a process that's been delegated to the counties. I'd like to talk a little bit about why House Bill 2615 is unclear. The language that the bill adds in order to change the law is in the first section. It says, notwithstanding ORS 254046 and except as provided by ORS 251375, that and notwithstanding those sections, that the county can apportion costs. Well, those sections, ORS 254046, states that cities do not pay for special elections. It expressly states that. By implication, that you may infer that cities must pay for general and primary. The other sections, it states the special district rules. By accepting those two statutes, the drafters of this statute are trying to make sure that they can allocate costs to cities. However, that does not get them there. 254046 again only implies that cities do not pay for general and primary costs. It's accepted knowledge. However, if you're going to do this, you need to expressly so state, I believe. And this language has some problems. So our first thing that we would ask this committee is that even if you believe this is a good idea, which we don't, but even if you do, if you could just hold off and think about some of the drafting problems, and then we can discuss some of the substantive problems also. The three issues that Nina will talk about a little more in depth about the substantive problems are the fact that elections are about the democratic responsibility of the state, and that's been delegated to the counties. The fact that the electoral responsibility of the counties was considered when the legislature figured out the taxing rates, and the responsibilities were there when the taxing rates were considered. So the costs for that were put into the taxing rates by the legislature. Additionally, and this is something Nina will go into a little more in depth, shifting a portion of the election cost to cities will place an undue burden on some residents, which may be unfair. With that, I'll let Ms. Rigor talk to you a little bit more in depth about the substantive issues.
Thank you. Representative Wilson, members of the committee, thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak today. Local elections, like health and human services, are a basic county service. ORS 246.2250 number 2 states that the county governing body is responsible for the necessary expenses incurred by the county clerk in administering the elections laws, and that those expenses shall be paid out of the county treasury. Requiring cities to help pay for the voters' pamphlets shifts a basic county cost when we are already struggling to pay for basic city services such as public safety and parks. County elections costs typically reside in a county's general fund. Therefore, county residents have already paid for their election services through their county property taxes and other county revenues. Shifting this cost to voters' pamphlets, the county residents who live in cities would be paying more than their fair share for election services. Many cities already help counties provide election services. For those of us who have city clerks or city recorders, we provide customer service by educating our citizens on how to accurately fill out forms and reports, as well as answering general questions. Even though we do this as a convenience to our citizens, it also helps the county elections by cutting down on the number of questions they need to respond to, and it also cuts down on the number of late and inaccurate forms and reports that they would probably have to respond to. And I would be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you. Do we have questions? Representative Walker.
Thank you, Chair Wilson. The voters' pamphlet, and either one of you can answer this, you probably each know part of the answer anyway. Voters' pamphlets, are they required in any of the elections other than the state election?
It's my understanding that they are not required.
That is also my understanding.
Okay, so it's just the state election where a voters' pamphlet is required.
I'm really not sure about the state election requirements. I do know in the local elections
the county
that
and
they
city.
Are discretionary.
They are discretionary. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Might be getting a clarification here on that. Were you happening to get a clarification?
This office confirms that's correct, that they're discretionary. They're nodding. All the secretary statements are nodding.
Okay, thank you.
They're all discretionary.
Ms. Rossick, would you please
come forward?
I'm here. Since you're here.
Working in the back.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Lynn Rossick from the State Elections Office.
Thank you.
How can I help you?
About voter pamphlets, mandatory, discretionary?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, county voters' pamphlets are not mandatory. A county may produce one for any election, need not produce one. The state must produce one for the primary and the general elections. But, no, some counties do have voters' pamphlets and others do not.
Thank you. Follow-up.
No follow-up. That answered my question.
Very good. Thank you. Appreciate that. Oh, yes. Representative Devlin.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is it mandatory, though, that the state include in the primary and general county's voters' pamphlets within the state voters' pamphlets?
Mr. Chair, Representative Devlin, the county and the state can cooperatively work together to put county materials in the state pamphlet, yes, they do that on a cost-sharing basis. So it's a cooperative matter. The state does do that with any county that wishes to participate in that program.
Representative Gardner.
That brings up one question, Ms. Rossick. If a county decided to do a voter's pamphlet statement and a city wished to put information in it, could they refuse to put such information in it?
Mr. Chair, Representative Gardner, I believe there are some requirements in Chapter 251 about county voters' pamphlets. Once a county decides to have a voter's pamphlet, then certain statutes do apply, and I don't think that they can refuse to have city materials in the pamphlet if there are city measures or candidates on the ballot. No, but so it's discretionary whether to have a pamphlet or not. Once you have a pamphlet, then there's certain mandatory obligations that come with that.
Just one follow-up. Then, once they do have that pamphlet, then whatever a city wishes to place in, whether 5 pages or 100, they have to produce?
Mr. Chair, Representative Gardner, no. I mean, what would be in there would be the standard materials that you would see, for instance, for a state measure, the measure itself, the ballot title, the explanatory statement, and then the paid argument. I mean, they can't just fill it with pages and pages of whatever they want to put in there, but in those categories, yes, the state ends up taking whatever is, or the county would have to take and print whatever related to that city measure, yes.
One last, Mr. Chair. promises, I know. But if the city wishes to put a statement on behalf of a measure that they put on the ballot, is there a requirement that they free of charge get to put in their own statement for it, or do they require to pay for them just as much as any private citizen?
Mr. Chair, Representative Gardner, my understanding is that if the city has something on that election for which the county is producing a pamphlet, then they can place in there their measure information without, as I understand it, without charge, and that's what this bill is about. And then then arguments will be accepted at the regular price for the measure.
Thank you.
Representative Mark.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There is some discussion about the formulary of taxes, et cetera, that were granted to counties in the past to cover the cost of elections. And at that particular probably juncture in time, we didn't have things like annexation on the regular ballot. So was indeed a formulary established, and have the conditions changed to such that maybe it warrants taking another look at it?
Mr. Chair, Representative March, I'm not directly familiar with how much thought exactly went into how to allocate the property taxes to the different taxing districts as far as the thinking of the counties carrying the elections burden. I think we have seen that in more recent years that there are more cities that are involved in these annexation measures that County Clerk Al Davidson just spoke to with the Salem measures. So, I mean, perhaps the circumstances have changed somewhat. But not every city, of course, has to vote on all annexations, but there has been a trend that there are more cities doing that now.
Thank you. Representative Gerard.
Hi, Lynn. Just want to make sure, again, I understand whether a city had 0 measures or 16 measures in a county voter's pamphlet, they are obligated to pay nothing.
Chair Wilson, Representative Gerard, that's my understanding. That's what this bill is about, would be to address that issue.
Thank you. Any more? Okay, thanks very much. I'd like to finish up, and I have no one else left to testify here unless any one of you wants to do so. Mr. Davidson, would you come back up, please?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Al Davidson, Marion County Clerk.
Yes, thanks for coming back. I wanted to talk to you just briefly about the cost of elections being anticipated in county tax bases. Can you comment on that? What is your understanding of that?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm not familiar with any original formulation of tax distribution that accounted for that. It all happened long before my time, if it happened. We do know that we have that responsibility now for those costs, and so we do budget for it. It's issues such as the situation that happened in the city of Salem that catches us off guard, because I had not budgeted for the kind of election that we were required to have with those 16 measures. What happened there was, in May of last year, the voters of Salem voted to vote on all annexations in the future. And so then the city council decided to put those on in November. Now, the city council had decided to put those on in March or May of this year or September or November of this year, they would pay the full cost of that election. Voter pamphlet, election cost, everything. But because they chose to put them on the November election, that fell on the county. But I really can't get to your question, as was raised by the League of Oregon Cities, as far as the initial tax formulation. I'm sorry.
Just wondering, when you look at attempting to recapture some of that cost by assessing charges based on your voter's pamphlet, is there any idea how closely that would come proportionately to covering that cost that we're talking about?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the county voter's pamphlets are very similar to the state voter pamphlet, that the costs are not covered, certainly, by the revenue that we take in. If we are allowed to allocate out the costs, we allocate out the actual costs, and that goes into a formula much like our other elections costs do for a special election, and we recover all but the county portion of that. The county pays its portion as well.
I see. Okay. Further questions? All right. Thanks for asking.
Thank you.
Anyone else like to testify on that? Representative Devlin.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chairman. I just have a question to ask that the committee administrator either answer or get legal counsel to respond. This is an interesting issue because we are being asked in this bill to actually mandate on one unit of local government a requirement on another unit of local government. And does it fit under the constitutional provisions under mandates from the legislature?
Okay, thank you. We'll check into that. All right, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2615. We will open a work session on House Bill 2321. Committee, this is Representative Krupp's bill. He had this to us before. I believe it was requested by Representative March, perhaps, that there be some information when he comes back, dealing with caseload, current service level, that issue. Representative March, do you have any comments about the Dash 1 amendments, line 9, paragraph B?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I think it's moving in the right direction. Getting information in there that would at least show the adjustment needed for increased caseload and inflation. I guess the one last concern I would have would be there's no way of getting any other explanation in there, but it's certainly an improvement over the original version.
Thank you. I think that what the representative is wanting to do is get, as he states in his bill, an outline in the print media and then a web address in that print media directing people where to get the details on a state website, which seems reasonable to me there. Any other comments on this?
I was trying to read this about the cost of cities, apportioning the cost of cities, and there's a formula actually that is used or set out by the Secretary of State, and I don't have the formula.
Are we talking about this bill or the previous bill?
Did I miss you close that one out?
Yes, we did.
I'm sorry, I was reading.
Well,
excuse me, Mr. Chair.
But it sounds apropos.
Yeah, I had to let her run for a moment.
Sorry.
any other thoughts on this bill? If not, sure. I'd be happy to take a motion.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Starr.
I move the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2321.
Representative Starr moves the Dash 1 amendments into House Bill 2321. Do we have discussion? Any objections? Dash 1s are adopted.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Stock.
I move House Bill 2321 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Starr moves House Bill 2321 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Devlin.
This will have a fiscal impact statement before it gets to the floor, and we believe that will be less than $50,000. Is that correct?
Yeah, we certainly do.
Okay.
That is correct. All right. Clerk, if you would call the roll, please.
Representative Devlin?
Aye.
Representative Coyle?
Aye.
Representative Gardner?
He is excused.
Representative Gerard?
Aye.
Representative Marks?
Aye.
Representative Starr?
Aye.
Representative Berger?
He is excused.
Representative Walter?
Aye.
Representative Wilson?
Aye. And motion carries. We will have Representative Krupp designated as the carrier there. Anything further to add here? All right. Thank you for being here today, and committee.